What's good, y'all? This is Breeze Brewing from the Mighty Juggernauts. And make sure you subscribe and download the podcast, Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Ein and Kel. Hip-hop journalism on the highest level.
Yeah, what's up? It's your boy Joel Ortiz, and I want everybody to make sure that they subscribe and download the podcast, Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenko. Yo, Tim, I hope all is well. You my guy. I know these interviews are not interviews, they're actually conversations, and I appreciate them all. Yawa.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ice-T. I want you to do something for me. Make sure you download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim I and Cal. It is official. All right, stop playing. Download and subscribe. Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim I and Cal. It's cold.
My next guest is a big hip-hop pioneer that has many firsts under his belt. He continues to promote and represent hip-hop and reminds us the importance of properly documenting the origins of hip-hop culture. He's a legendary Kango Kid. I want to welcome him to allhiphop.com presents the Library with Tim Einenko. Kango Kid, it's an honor to have you on. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me. So, there go my brother Chuck right there. Oh,
say Chuck. So, Kango, of course, I want to start from the beginning. You started out as a dancer. What drew you to dancing as a teenager? As
my teachers back then was Soul Train. Soul Train drew me into that, man. When my mom is too busy doing whatever, housework or whatever it is that she has to do, she plops me right in front of a television, and the television captures my attention, and she can do whatever she got to do, and I will not leave that area. I would still sit there mesmerized by the TV. So Soul Train was absolutely my teacher, my babysitter, and taught me how to dance. In terms of the style of dancing I was doing, which was popping, believe it or not, that got kicked off by watching Shields and Yarnell. And I don't know if any one of you guys remember them, but they were the male and female miming team. And their whole routine was just strictly miming. And, watching cats get into popping and using the miming technique to do it on beat was just, incredible for me. So I used both of those things that I've seen, both with Shields and Yarnell and with Soul Train, and taught myself, that's what gravitated me towards dancing. But in terms of entertainment, before even Soul Train, I was watching shows like Tom Jones, artists like Ingeborg Humperdinck, Donnie and Marie, the Osmond Brothers. I was basically into all of those white acts that you just heard that me say, and loved it and said, yo, this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an entertainer. Mind you, all of this was before rap. So I never grew up saying I wanted to be a rapper. I said I wanted to be an entertainer, a songwriter, a performer like these cats. So dancing started with that, bro, watching Soul Train.
When did you take watching Soul Train to dance outside of the house?
That's what school is for. School, man. School has talent shows, man. God bless schools and talent shows. So whenever the teacher would say, does anyone have any talent? Is any, anyone can sing? Anyone can dance? Anyone wants to be on the show? I'm like, really? You guys are going to let me do this? Like, I can, word, permission to do what I do at home in front of my class, classmates and so on. So that's where it happened, man. Catholic school. I was an Our Lady of Loretto in Brooklyn, New York. And their lunchroom served as the stage, as the auditorium per se. And so when they're ready to do the show, they just get all the tables and chairs out of there, and stage has the curtain and the whole nine. They just transform that whole lunchroom area to a theater, basically. And that's where I let everyone know what I can do. And, you know, it wasn't even a dance thing for me at that time. I was on stage letting everyone know I could sing. Mm-hmm. And because I grew up listening to all that pop stuff, one of the first songs I ever sang on stage was a song by Andy Gibbs. Love is higher than a mountain. Love is thicker than water. So that was the first song I ever sang on stage. And, you know, all the you know, my fellow classmates in the whole school was like, oh, my God, you know, he did that all right. You know, and that was my little taste of stardom. I'm like, all right, I got the sweat in me, yo.
PG documentary.
Yeah, yo, I should have been, man. I would have loved to have been. You know what I mean? And so that was the start for me, bro. Outside of the house, Catholic school, stage gave me the platform to realize I'm okay at this. You know, I don't suck at this thing while performing.
So when did MCing begin? I mean, who was that first MC you heard that said, all right, this is kind of, I want to transition?
Well, you know, my older brother was a DJ, God rest his soul. My older brother was like one of the first DJs in our neighborhood. He had two turntables and a mixer, and he brought it to the basement, and he was 5 years older than me. So he had all of his boys come together, and they formed a crew, called the Beeline Crew. So everyone had a name that ended with B. So my brother was Dr. B, and there was a rapper named Master B, and another cat, Chili B. It's like everyone had a B in their name, and my birth name is, my government is Sean. So I decided to put myself in his group. This is his people's, but whenever they all get together in the basement, I would come in there and, you know, and have my raps written and come in as Sean B. And so when I'd get on the mic and do my thing, I turned out to be better than the rest of the cats that was in his circle. And they all loved it. They would all say, yo, Doc, yo, your brother's hotter than you. And that pissed him off. And he said, bro, do not come down here again when my friends are down here. And so I basically got kicked out of the group that I put myself in. And so I got pissed off and said, you know what? I'm going to start my own group. And so I started a crew called the Death Crew. And the Death Crew was the same concept as my brother's Beeline Crew. So I became Sean D. And I had this other dude named Master D and another dude that came in named Chili D. So we started to do our thing. And that was my first introduction to doing this whole hip hop thing. And in terms of the records that I was turned on to, these are the records that my brother purchased. So I heard King Tim III, Fatback Band, you know, by Fatback Band, the first time through him. And then Lady B, and then Sequence, and Super Rhymes. These are all the first hip hop songs that I ever heard. And it was because he purchased them and played them, you know, in the basement. And so I got turned on that way. And this is before these songs hit the radio. And actually those songs didn't hit the radio. Sugar Hill Gang with Rapper's Delight was the first to hit the radio. But those songs that I'm talking about that I shared with you were pretty much underground, blowing up before, you know, Rapper's Delight. And so that's what got me turned on to hip hop, hearing these records that my brother purchased, and being competitive and being told that I couldn't be as good as I was, made me better. That's how I got to ask you,
what came first, Lady B or Sequence?
I think Lady B.
Uh-huh.
Am I correct?
Yes, you are, man. We were just talking about that.
I remember that Yellow Label. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And there's another artist, I forgot the name, that came within that era as well, Spoonie G.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. These are all the cats in the early days of hip-hop before radio started to play any rap songs.
Yeah, shout out to Lady B. We grew up on her with the Street Beat Show in Philly.
No doubt. That was one of my fairy tale lovers, believe it or not. You know what I mean? When I met Lady B, I was like, oh my God, yo, she's fine. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Remember, you saw how I was in Philly when we were hanging out.
Yes, sir.
After play.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. All right. So when did when did the writing begin for you? Were you already writing at the time?
I was already writing, man. I was writing before any record deal. I wrote Fairy Tale Lover while I was on tour with Houdini. So this is before the UTFO deal. And I didn't write it for UTFO. I didn't write it for anyone. It was just an idea that hit me, you know, as a young kid, and I'm imagining what love is because I'm 16 years old. I was never in a real relationship at 16. And so I'm imagining that love has to be equivalent to a fairy tale, you know, someone's dream come true. And I used all the fairy tale characters in the song, you know, Alice in Wonderland and Cow Jumping Over the Moon, Little Red Riding Hood. I threw all of that into this song before ever writing Roxanne or having a recording deal to have this official group called UTFO. All of that songwriting stuff happened before the rap career kicked off. So I've been writing since I was 8 years old, for real.
Did you share that song, Fairy Tale Lover, before, you know, the public?
No, I didn't share that song until it was time for us to do an album. Mm. So no one heard the song as we did Beats and Rhymes, which was our first single. No one heard that as we were in the studio recording Hanging Out, which was our second song that we produced and, you know, and recorded. After we did Hanging Out is when the record company said, I need a song for the B-side. And then we decided to write, you know, write Roxanne, Roxanne. And so during that time, no one ever heard Fairy Tale Lover. It wasn't until the success of Roxanne, Roxanne, and the record company said, okay, enough of these singles, it's time for us to do an album. We had to start putting ideas together, putting together at least 10 songs for this album. And I sang that song, The Full Force, not thinking that would be a song that would be on the album. I just sang, you know, here I am with a band. I didn't know a band before them. I've seen bands on television, but I've never hung out with a real band. So as I'm sitting there with my dude, Jerry, who's the keyboard player of Full Force, I start singing Fairy Tale Lover to him. And he starts putting some chords to it. And then Kurt hears what I'm doing, and he grabbed a brand new guitar. He had just bought this guitar, and it was a guitar without the... the head on top of the guitar where you tune it. Well, this particular guitar didn't have a head. It was just the rectangular joint. I've never seen this before. And so he starts adding some chords to it as well. And B-Fine starts adding some drum programming. And Paul and Lou starts singing along with me in harmony. And we all said, yo, this sounds all right. And then they said, yo, why don't we put this on the album? And I was shocked. I was like, oh, we're doing a rap album, right? You guys serious? You want to put this on there? They said, yeah, but look, we don't want to, you know, focus on you as the lead. There's no lead in this group. So we're going to coach the other two so that they can sing, you know, the other verses in this. And, you know, I was just so honored. I was like, I don't care. Let them sing whatever. I'm just shocked and happy and honored that you guys are allowing my song, not my raps. You've loved my raps, but you're about allowing my song to be on this album. And, so that's how that happened. But I've been writing songs way before a record deal, man. Many, many years before a record deal.
So Rainbows in the Sky, was that you?
Yeah, all of that. No, I didn't sing that part, but I wrote the entire song.
Right, yeah. Right, okay.
I want to step back a little bit. You know, you and Doc Ice became the first dancers for obviously
a rap group
and Houdini. What was that conversation? I mean, you were writing rhymes, you're dancing as well. But what was that conversation when they came to you and said, "We want you guys for"?
We actually, as the talent, had nothing to do with that conversation. That wasn't our place. That's what the mouthpiece is for. That's what management is for. And Jalil and Ecstasy approached our manager at the time, God rest his soul as well, Steve Salem. He approached Steve Salem and said, look, I love your kids. I love how they do what they do. We would love to have them come out on the road with us as we perform. And that was Jalil and X's idea. And my manager, Steve Salem, loved the idea. And that's how that happened. We had nothing to do with it. He comes to us after the fact and says, that group Houdini, they loved how you guys did what you did. And they just asked me, would you guys join them on tour as they perform. And mind you, this is the first time we're getting paid to do this. And, you know, we were just excited as 16-year-old kids that this group, that we knew their songs, of course, that this group was interested in having us join, you know, their joint. And again, how incredible was that? Because that is the first time it was ever done. You know, every rap group after that had to have at least two dancers go out with them, man. And we started that. And that's just so crazy to think of, you know, when you think of Scoop and Scrap, or you think of the Boys from Heavy D and the Boys, you know, and all these other groups that had dancers. We kicked that off, man. And that's just an incredible thing to know that you planted that seed.
You know, you mentioned these tours, and you watch some of the old film of these live shows, and you know, Houdini as well as you guys are like these incredible live performers. What do you take away most from not just you guys performing, but also watching Houdini perform, and how do you use that today, and what did you use that throughout your career?
Well, one of the things that Houdini did for me is taught me how to become a heartthrob. Because Ecstasy and that hat with those leather shorts making these ladies scream. You know, I was always Kango Kid. So while he's in the front with that Zorro, you know, hat, and I'm in the back wearing my Kango hat dancing, he's in the front making ladies drool. And that's not a figment of my imagination or me exaggerating. I watched these ladies scream for dude, and proud because I'm on stage, you know, as someone on stage, you want that opposite side, everyone in front of you enjoying what you're doing. And as we danced and they're enjoying us, Ecstasy and Jahlil doing their thing and they're enjoying them, making us a great act. So what I took out of that was mentorship. You know, I was watching how this is done for me to become as good and make it my business to later be better. And it happened. Years later, I became a hat-bearing heartthrob, rap heartthrob as well. And I remember it was a magazine. I think it was Right On. And Right On had a page with someone drew all of these, you know, whatever graphic that existed back then. They drew hats, and the article was called Mad Hatters, Hip Hop Mad Hatters, and it had several hats on one side and names on the other side. And the hats were Ecstasy's hat, my hat, LL's hat, Dana Dane's hat, Silver from Whistle. Silver used to wear a headband with a raccoon tail on it, and it had Silver's, you know, headwear on it. And what the fans had to do was to draw a line connecting the hat to the person. And the fact that I made that page and I'm sharing that page with Ecstasy, yo, that's one of those moments where, you know, Ma, I made it, Ma. You know, and so that's what I took out of being part of Houdini, man. He taught me Ecstasy, man. He taught me.
I'm sorry.
He taught me how to be a heartthrob, man. That's all I'm saying. Go ahead, man.
I'm not putting you on blast, but we had a conversation. You talked about touring with them and some of the, you know, the behind the scenes things. What was that like?
That was surreal. You know, I'm a 16-year-old kid being introduced to this thing I've heard of called groupies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it prior to being out on the road, that word was a myth.
Yeah.
And so being on the road and watching all of this was just incredible, man. I mean, you know, women allowed themselves to be free. You know, and I later understood why, because this is the individual that they're watching on television and saying, man, if I had a moment with him, you know, he can get it. And when they got that moment, we got it. You know what I mean? Like, I would watch a young lady approach Houdini and say, can I get your autograph? And they would give, you know, the members of Houdini or Sharpie, and they, and members would say, okay, sure, you know, give me the paper. And say, no, 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 right here. Boom. And they rip out a breast and say, sign it right here. And everyone is signing the chick's breast. And I'm like, yo, that happens? Like, this happens? You know, so as a 16-year-old kid watching this type of stuff go down, man, it was surreal. It was crazy. Yeah. You know, and it navigated us to us doing our thing. And what's so funny is that Full Force, who are our managers and producers, had never experienced that. Mm-hmm. So when they finally got their success and they're on tour with us, we're telling them, no, that's not how that's done. Let me show you how that's done. And we were coaching our older brothers as to, you know, we're vets now. We've been doing this for like 2-3 years, man. You know, fall back, man. Let me show you how this is done. You know, and it was just a crazy thing to be an expert in that world. Yeah. At 16, 17, 18. You know what I mean?
I can't see Bowlegged Lou seriously with groupie. I just can't see it.
Yo, it was funny. And they even cracked jokes about that. Like, yo, these little kids was schooling us on how to maneuver in this thing. And we were, you know.
King, I want to ask you more about you posted on your IG page a performance of you as a 16-year-old kid getting introduced by ecstasy.
Yes, sir.
And what you see there, I think, just from an outside perspective, is like there was a real mentorship there.
Oh, absolutely, man. You can see how much he respected me, you know, and you know, you don't see those things at the time. At the time, I was just being a performer. I know that this is the part of the show where I do that thing that I'm supposed to do that we rehearsed and so on. But, you know, it was a fan from the Netherlands that hit me on Facebook and said, I have a video for you that I think you'd enjoy, you know, after, you know, X passed. And when he sent me the video, man, I saw the love, the respect, the admiration that he had for my skills and the way he introduced me. And, you know, it brought me to tears because I realized at that moment who he was to me and who I was to him. He absolutely, you know, treated me like someone who was under his wing that he was proud of. That was, you saw all of that. You saw the admiration. You saw the brag and boast, like, I want to show off my little brother right now. And, you know, it was apparent what kind of love, respect existed between all of us out there as kids. Because, you know, I didn't find out, and this is so crazy, I didn't find out till he passed, like, you know, what was it, like 2 months ago, that he was only like 2 years older than me. Yeah. As a kid, I looked at ecstasy like a big brother, you know, so I thought he had me by 4 years or something. And, you know, when they said his age, I was like, hold up, stop. So I was 16 and he was 18? Are you serious? And that hit me. Yo, that hit me like crazy, man. I never saw him as, you know, we look at somebody a year older than us, like, man, we the same age. I never looked at X or Jahlil as we're the same age. I was always that little kid to my big brothers. And you saw the love that my big brothers had for their little brothers.
So I imagine when you started or when you started thinking of going, you know, I guess leaving the nest, so to say, I mean, going out to become UTFO, when did you start thinking about that? But then did you have that conversation with,
They knew everything. You know, my manager was worked in the same office with Russell Simmons. So we were in there with Run, with LL. You know, me and L used to argue every day about whose song is going to, you know, chart over whose song, you know. And he had I Need a Beat while we had Roxanne. And I'm telling dude, man, I'm gonna slay you on the charts, man. My song's gonna sell, you know, 200,000. And so I said, man, mine's gonna do like 400,000. Man, mine's gonna go platinum. Man, mine's gonna go, you know, multi-platinum. And so, you know, they don't sell 367 trillion, million, billion records, bro. And we would have stupid arguments like that. And this is all in the office that my manager and Russell Simmons work together. So having, business transactions take place between my group and Houdini, you know, everyone knew we were working towards getting our deal. It was no secret to anyone. So when we finally landed it and we left the nest, as you say, it was a, you know, congratulations and we wish you guys success. And, you know, as everyone wished it, no one imagined it would become what it became. You know, it's like, wow, I said good luck, but I didn't think dude was going to, you know, do that, you know, where I, for real, where our record went from being a hit to becoming a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. No one saw that coming.
Right.
You know,
right.
So we went from being the group that was under Houdini to being the group on the same caliber as Houdini. You know, no one saw that coming. Yeah. You know, so, leaving the nest wasn't a surprise to anyone. Everyone knew that we had it in us because Houdini allowed us to rap while we were on tour with them. They didn't just let us dance. There were times that they gave us the mic and we were rapping the crowd, you know, while they went backstage to change. We're the ones doing our thing, keep the crowd going. It was never unexpected for us to do this. You know, so when all love, man. There wasn't any jealousy. There wasn't any envy. There was no such thing happening, man. You know, it's one of those things where, and I've said this for years, celebrities, you may hear them say it's lonely at the top. And what they mean by that is when you are surrounded up there by just those type of peoples, you want to get your people in. Like, how can I get my dude to hang out with me backstage? Like, I love that celebrity and I love this celebrity, but where's the cat I grew up with, man? I want to share this with him. I want him to be there. And so it was that type of family affair where they were happy. We became family. Mm. So they were happy to have family up on top. It's not lonely here anymore. We're all celebrities now. You know what I mean? It was nothing but love, bro. It really was. Strategically, I got a GED on handling biz. Entree point, defending my heart, putting in work on a regular from day to dark. Shake hands with the enemies, make deals with these metaphors and these similes. Ghetto exec, sitting on the board with a 40 ounce of the broom. Briefcase full of paperwork, repping the calls. No dough, network. Rock the guard, King Kong, flashback 89. Flashback 89. Flashback 89. Flashback 89. Flashback 89. Flashback 89. I'm the rapper, give him way back. It's Flatbush, Brooklyn, where I stayed at. Cherry curl wet, all day, can't go hat, go chain wear. Now I'm rocking platinum black. This is just out of scissors, kiss and get sold. You can kiss and kiss, that's how I resolve. It ain't pretty. You gotta piss a sizzle. And that's how platinum records are sizzle. I'm classic, vintage, if you don't know. It's sing, rap, and dance in just one show. Knock it out with just one blow. When it look like I'm empty, I got one more. But, yeah, you like me now. Then you wanna come and fight me now. Short money, what you hype me now? Can't see me, what you sight me now? When I'm dead, yo, that might be how. Flashback 89. Flashback 89. Flashback 89.